Jesus walked along and saw a man who had been blind from birth. Jesus spat on the ground, made mud with his saliva, and smeared the man's eyes with the mud. Then he told him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam." This name means one who has been sent. So the man went off and washed, and came back, able to see. His neighbors and the people who'd been accustomed to see him begging began to ask, "Isn't this the fellow who used to sit and beg?" Some were claiming it was he, others maintained it was not, but someone who looked like him. The man himself said, "I'm the one, all right." Next, they took the man who'd been born blind to the Pharisees. Note that it was on a Sabbath that Jesus had made the mud paste and opened his eyes. The Pharisees in turn began to inquire how he'd recovered his sight. He told them, "He put mud on my eyes, I washed it off, and now I can see." This prompted some of the Pharisees to assert, "This man cannot be from God because he does not keep the Sabbath." Others objected, "If a man is a sinner, how can he perform signs like these?" They were sharply divided over him. Then they addressed the blind man again. "Since it was your eyes he opened, what do you have to say about him?" "He is a prophet," he replied. "What?" they exclaimed. "You are steeped in sin from your birth and you're giving us lectures?" With that, they threw him out bodily. When Jesus heard of his expulsion, he sought him out and asked him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" He answered, "Who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" "You have seen him," Jesus replied. "He's speaking to you now." "I do believe, Lord," he said, and bowed down to worship him.
The first thing that strikes one in the opening lines of this gospel is the exactness of the description of the man Jesus saw as he walked along. A man who had been blind from birth. Not just a blind man, but one who had been born blind. John, the only evangelist who recounts this episode, this miracle, wants us to have all the facts. And in the long version of the gospel, the man himself emphasizes that he was born blind when he expresses his amazement at the incredulity of the Pharisees.
"Ever since the world began, it is unheard of for anyone to open the eyes of a man who was blind. If this man were not from God, he couldn't do a thing."
The man's parents, too, are interrogated and confirm that, yes, he was born blind. If the event had taken place today, the authorities would no doubt ask if the man had always been visually impaired. I wonder sometimes what they think, those of our fellow men and women who are lumped under the general category of handicapped because they do not possess hearing or sight or speech to the full, when instead of being described simply as blind or deaf or dumb, they're given some fancy name, in the belief that the euphemism will in some way make them feel better. Euphemism, the use of a pleasing term for one that is harsh or offensive. A softened expression. I can't help thinking that it's the one who uses the euphemism who's afraid of being hurt or offended, merely because the blind or deaf or dumb man or woman exists and makes him or her feel uncomfortable for being whole. It's just a thought. The tables are turned sometimes, though, when one we believed impaired is suddenly seen to possess something the rest of us lack. As in this poem by W.H. Davies. If you've ever been lost in the fog, you won't need to use much imagination.
I saw the fog grow thick, which soon made blind my ken. It made tall men of boys and giants of tall men. It clutched my throat. I coughed. Nothing was in my head except two heavy eyes like balls of burning lead. And when it grew so black that I could know no place, I lost all judgment then of distance and of space. The street lamps and the lights upon the halted cars could either be on earth or be the heavenly stars. A man passed by me close. I asked my way. He said, "Come, follow me, my friend." I followed where he led. He rapped the stones in front. "Trust me," he said, "and come." I followed like a child. A blind man led me home.
For someone who's always had perfect sight, it's hard to relate to total blindness, especially blindness from birth. It's perhaps easier to do so if the blind person in question was once able to see. Our sympathy is also more easily aroused, because we know, and the person now blind knows, what has been lost. Moreover, the thought of losing one's sight is a frightening one. Rudyard Kipling suffered from this fear as a child and was obliged to wear glasses, which were uncommon in those days, he wrote. And he explored the theme of losing sight in a novel, The Light That Failed. Of the moment when blindness finally takes over, he writes, "Something cracked inside his temples like an overstrained bowstring, and he was alone in the thick night." In a gentle poem entitled simply Going Blind, the German poet Rainer Maria Rilke writes,
"She'd sat just like the others there at tea, and then I'd seemed to notice that her cup was being a little differently picked up. She'd smiled once. It had almost hurt to see. And when eventually they rose and talked, and slowly, and as chance led, were dispersing through several rooms there, laughing and conversing, I noticed her. Behind the rest she walked subduedly, like someone who presently will have to sing, and with so many listening. On those bright eyes of hers, with pleasure glistening, played, as on pools, an outer radiancy. She followed slowly, and she needed time, as though some long ascent were not yet by, and yet as though when she had ceased to climb, she would no longer merely walk, but fly."
For a poet or painter to lose sight would seem a tragic destiny indeed. But in a famous sonnet, John Milton came to terms with the situation. Here now is On His Blindness.
"When I consider how my light is spent, ere half my days in this dark world and wide, and that one talent, which is death to hide, lodged with me useless, though my soul more bent to serve therewith my Maker, and present my true account, lest he returning chide, doth God exact day labor, light denied? I fondly ask, but patience, to prevent that murmur, soon replies. God doth not need either man's work or his own gifts. He who best bear his mild yoke, they serve him best. His state is kingly, thousands at his bidding speed, and post o'er land and ocean without rest. They also serve who only stand and wait."
Standing and waiting always in the vicinity of the temple were the lame, the cripples, the beggars, and among them on this occasion, the man born blind. When the disciples point him out to Jesus, they don't ask him to heal the man, but rather to tell them whether the man had sinned or his parents, voicing the common belief that physical disabilities were a punishment from God. Our Lord's answer is unequivocal.
"Neither he nor his parents sinned. He was born blind, so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as the day lasts, I must carry out the work of the one who sent me. The night will soon be here when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world."
And without more ado, Jesus proceeds to give light to the blind eyes of the man before him, using first a common gesture which would have been familiar to the disciples and any onlookers. For it was believed that saliva and mud possessed curative qualities for diseases of the eyes. On a previous occasion at Bethsaida, he had cured a blind man, using saliva only, and working the miracle in two stages.
Then, putting spittle on his eyes and laying his hands on him, he asked, "Can you see anything?" The man, who was beginning to see, replied, "I can see people. They look like trees to me, but they're walking about." Then he laid his hands on the man's eyes again, and he saw clearly. He was cured, and he could see everything plainly and distinctly.
We don't know if this man had always been blind, but the fact that people looked like trees walking suggests that he had seen trees. I wonder. Whatever the case, our Lord gives to both these miracles a slow time sequence, as if he wants to make sure the message goes home, as the ending shows in this episode, where the question is not whether the man has received his physical sight, but whether he has the light of faith. "I do believe, Lord," he said. But let's take a look at the place where the miracle actually happened. It wasn't in our Lord's presence even, but at the pool of Silo. On my map of Jerusalem, it's called Hezekiah's Pool. Hezekiah was king in Jerusalem 700 years before Christ, when the city was under threat of siege by the Assyrians. And as the only spring of water was situated just outside the old city of David, Hezekiah decided to cut a long underground tunnel and so bring the spring water into the city. He then sealed up the spring and hid it from the advancing army of Sennacherib. Today, the Virgin's Fountain, as the spring is known, provides the water for the pool of Silo at the other end of Hezekiah's tunnel. The healing of the man born blind took place shortly after the Feast of Tabernacles. During that feast, which lasted a week, a procession to the pool of Silo took place every morning. The water, which was brought back in a golden pitcher, was poured out in libation before the altar of the Most High. As the priest drew the water, the choir chanted from Isaiah.
"You shall draw water with gladness from the fountains of salvation."
Our Lord's choice of the pool for the working of the miracle must have added to the fury of the Pharisees, apart from the fact that it happened on the Sabbath, for it reminded them of how the prophet Elisha had sent Naaman the leper to wash in the Jordan. For us, it calls up a different image, that of the constant procession of sick pilgrims to wash in the waters of Lourdes. "Go and drink from the spring and wash yourself there," the lady said to Bernadette. And the girl made for the river Gave.
"But she told me this was not the place. And then she pointed out, with her finger, where I ought to go. I went, but found only a little pool of dirty water. I dipped my hand in, but could not hold any, so I started to scrape the earth away, and I was able to take some. 3 times I threw it away. The 4th time I managed to drink some."